We're clearly facing multiple crises at the same time. We're having the pandemic and the health crisis. We have an economic and social crisis. We have a looming debt crisis in the global south. And then we have a climate and ecological crisis. And there can be no doubt that the climate and ecological crisis are accelerating.
If there is one thing to learn from any of these crises, it's the need to be better prepared, not only to withstand future pandemics, but also the other major looming threat to humanity, climate change.
The Earth is on course to soon exceed climate tipping points, which present a real threat of abrupt and irreversible environmental change. I'm Ulrich Vos. I'm the director of the SOAS Center for Sustainable Finance at SOAS University of London, and also a senior research fellow at the German Development Institute.
And I'm Bruce Edwards. Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. Despite warnings from scientists about the risks of a pandemic, the world was simply unprepared for this one. And Ulrich Vos says the same is true for climate change. Vos is director of the Center for Sustainable Finance at SOAS University of London and author of Investing in a Green Recovery, published in the September 2020 issue of Finance and Development magazine. So the current crisis that everyone is focused on right now is the pandemic, of course. But is this pandemic really overshadowing a much bigger crisis?
Well, this pandemic strikes us at a time when we have around a decade left to achieve a low-carbon transition and bring the world economy to a trajectory limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees, which is what we've agreed on in the Paris Agreement. So we essentially have a very short time span to avoid catastrophic global warming, and it's therefore absolutely imperative that the various crisis responses that we engineer now amount to a transformative policy response that will help us also to address these longer-term crises.
And so what do you think will the climate crisis look like when we are at that critical stage, when people have no choice but to deal with this crisis, just as we are now wearing masks, something we could never have even considered only a few months ago?
We're already getting a foretaste of the climate crisis. Not only with the COVID pandemic, and it's important to note that many of the root causes of climate change are also increasing the risk of pandemics. So this will not be the last pandemic we are going to see probably in our lifetimes. But we're also seeing things like the recent wildfires in Australia, California, or, Philippines was just hit by a massive typhoon. Last month, we've had huge landslides and floods in Vietnam. So there already is an increase in the number and intensity of storms and droughts and other climate-related disasters that really show that the problem has arrived already. But the problem is it will get much worse. Also the heat waves we've been witnessing, and this is basically going to be the new normal. And it will look different in different places, but there will be few places that will not really feel it.
So do you think that this pandemic may shift our thinking? I mean, will people be more amenable, do you think, to preventative climate policy than they were perhaps pre-pandemic?
One would hope so. I think already last year, with some very severe climate problems, heat waves in Europe and North America, then the wildfires in Australia at the beginning of the year, made people to realize that climate change is real, that it's not just something for some faraway, poor developing countries, which will be hit hard, but this will also hit people in Europe, in America, and everywhere, basically. And the pandemic certainly has strengthened the feeling of vulnerability. And I think a lot of people have realized that we need to become more resilient, that our economies, our societies need to be more resilient, and we need to invest in this resilience. So we need to change the ways we're going about these problems and have a more long-term thinking.
But you know, long-term thinking, political objectives are very short-term, and we're highly aware of that, especially right now. While avoiding a climate crisis, as you just mentioned there, takes a long-term approach, how do you overcome the political barriers to green policy?
Well, clearly, the short-term crisis responses we have to engineer now need to be aimed at protecting jobs and boosting the recovery. But they also need to be coupled with longer-term strategic policy goals, such as mitigating climate change and shoring up adaptive capacities and boosting resilience. So as much as possible, we need to use the economic stimulus now and the recovery measures to strengthen the resilience of our economies and help a just transition. And I think it's very important to highlight time and again that there is no trade-off between choosing a sustainable recovery, a green recovery, however you want to call it, and economic progress and development. Many green technologies have matured, and low carbon energy, for example, is now in most cases cheaper than fossil fuel-based energy. And also, we have a lot of empirical evidence that green stimulus measures, green projects can actually generate more employment and deliver higher short-term returns per dollar spent compared with conventional fiscal stimulus. And if you look at the recent World Economic Outlook from the IMF from this October, you can also see very nicely how a green recovery is not just environmentally sensible, but it's also fundamentally good economic policy that really ensures the foundations for longer-term economic success and also sustainability of public finances.
Yeah, as you just mentioned there, that economists are talking about how a green recovery will at least potentially create more jobs. Can you give us an example, perhaps, of a green project that has delivered some of those short-term returns?
Well, I think one nice example is retrofitting houses. So to reduce carbon emissions, it will be crucial that we retrofit houses, that we reduce emissions from building stock. And these are crucial areas that need to be worked on to achieve our climate goals. And they are very labor intensive. Yeah? So I think that's a nice example. But also take energy. Renewable energy is actually much more labor intensive than fossil fuel based energy. So there are a lot of areas where you can really make a difference, both in terms of employment generation, but also emissions reduction.
So the issue of financing the sustainable development goals was challenging from the very beginning for many countries, especially developing countries pre-pandemic. How can this work, do you think, now given the dire state of public finances across the globe now?
Yeah, as you say, before the pandemic already, we had quite a lot of developing countries that had severe problems with debt sustainability. So without a large-scale debt relief and efforts at facilitating a green recovery, the international community can basically abandon its hope to achieve the SDGs and also the Paris Agreement. But besides debt relief, which also needs to involve private creditors, I think, we need new liquidity. So we should again bring back on the table the issue of issuing new special drawing rights, also a reallocation of unused special drawing rights in developed countries. We need to have a discussion about scaling up the lending capacity of multilateral development banks so that there really is also fresh money coming to support governments of developing countries that crucially need the support so that they can invest in a green and sustainable recovery.
And you talk about, in this article in Finance and Development magazine, you talk about the importance of assessing climate risks within the financial sector, as a means to help convince investors that green investments are the most sustainable. But wouldn't, or do you worry that may chase investment away from those climate vulnerable developing countries that need it the most?
I do. First of all, I think it's absolutely crucial to acknowledge that we need to redirect finance away from dirty activities into sustainable activities. And this can only happen if negative externalities, climate risks are properly priced in. So we need to have an incorporation of climate risks and so on in financial sector decision making. But as you say, those countries that are most at risk of climate change are likely to see adverse effects. So the sad reality is that the impact of climate change is the greatest in the countries that have contributed the least to global warming. And we already can see now that climate-vulnerable developing countries are having to pay a climate risk premium in their borrowing from international capital markets. And there is indeed a risk that with greater awareness in financial markets of climate risks, that these climate risk premia will further rise. And so this would make cost of capital more expensive for governments and also for private corporations. And we've produced empirical evidence that this is already the case. But the conclusion, I think, is that we need to provide more support to climate-vulnerable developing countries so that they can invest in adaptation, that they can invest in resilience in order to avoid this potentially vicious circle where greater climate vulnerability and greater awareness of these climate risks leads to higher cost of capital, less fiscal space for investment in resilience and so on, which would set them on a downward slope. And we need more support from the international community through public development banks, help these countries invest in resilience. And we know that greater resilience will help to bring down the vulnerability and the cost of capital.
So, I mean, we're talking about a green recovery here from the extremely detrimental economic impact of the pandemic. In your mind, what does a green recovery look like? And how do we avoid slipping back into that quick and dirty approach rather than the longer term green and clean, given the grim state of public finances coming out of this pandemic?
We clearly need to prioritize spending into areas that contribute to sustainable development. So it's not about adding a little bit green here or there. I think we really need to mainstream sustainability in public finances. And this sounds very abstract, but we need to align the tax system with sustainability goals. We need to phase out fossil fuel subsidies, which are still at a very high level around the world. We need to make sure that governments and the budgeting process incorporates climate risks and sustainability risks. So it's really about mainstreaming sustainability across all public activities. And this should also then, of course, include public financial institutions and also international financial institutions such as multilateral development banks. They need to mainstream sustainability across the operations, not finance any activities that run contrary to the climate goals, but also the other SDG targets. So the challenges are really enormous. But this crisis also provides a good opportunity to rethink our economies and societies and how we want to shape them. If we don't act now and make concerted efforts to significantly strengthen investment to mitigate and adapt to climate change, many countries will find themselves in a permanent crisis mode with more pandemics, more shocks, more instability. And to avoid that, we do need a green recovery now.
Ulrich Vols, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ulrich Vols is director of the Center for Sustainable Finance at SOAS University of London and senior research fellow at the German Development Institute. Look for his article on investing in a green recovery published in the September 2020 issue of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND to read it online or download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe. You can also follow us on Twitter @IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.